The Man That Corrupted Hadleyburg and Other Stories by Mark Twain. The Man That Corrupted Hadleyburg. It was many years ago. Hadleyburg was the most honest and upright town in all the region round about. It had kept that reputation unsmirched during three generations, and was prouder of it than of any other of its possessions. It was so proud of it, and so anxious to ensure its perpetuation, that it began to teach the principles of honest dealing to its babies in the cradle, and made the like teachings the staple of their culture thenceforward through all the years devoted to their education. Also, throughout the formative years, temptations were kept out of the way of the young people, so that their honesty could have every chance to harden and solidify, and become a part of their very bone. The neighboring towns were jealous of this honorable supremacy, and affected to sneer at Hadleyburg's pride in it, and call it vanity, but all the same they were obliged to acknowledge that Hadleyburg was in reality an incorruptible town. And if pressed, they would also acknowledge that the mere fact that a young man hailed from Hadleyburg was all the recommendation he needed when he went forth from his natal town to seek for responsible employment. But at last, in the drift of time, Hadleyburg had the ill luck to offend a passing stranger, possibly without knowing it, certainly without caring for Hadleyburg, was sufficient unto itself, and cared not a rap for strangers or their opinions. Still, it would have been well to make an exception in this one's case, for he was a bitter man, and revengeful. All through his wanderings during a whole year he kept his injury in mind, and gave all his leisure moments to trying to invent a compensating satisfaction for it. He contrived many plans, and all of them were good, but none of them was quite sweeping enough. The poorest of them would hurt a great many individuals, but what he wanted was a plan which would comprehend the entire town, and not let so much as one person escape unhurt. At last he had a fortunate idea, and when it fell into his brain it lit up his whole head with an evil joy. He began to form a plan at once, saying to himself, "That is the thing to do, I will corrupt the town." 6 months later he went to Hadleyburg, and arrived in a buggy at the house of the old cashier of the bank about 10 at night. He got a sack out of the buggy, shouldered it, and staggered with it through the cottage yard, and knocked at the door. A woman's voice said, "Oh, men," and he entered, and set his sack behind the stove in the parlor, saying politely to the old lady who sat reading the Missionary Herald by the lamp, "Pray keep your seat, madam, I will not disturb you. There, now it is pretty well concealed. One would hardly know it was there. Can I see your husband a moment, madam?" "No, he was gone to Brixton, and might not return before morning." "Very well, madam, it is no matter. I merely wanted to leave that sack in his care, to be delivered to the rightful owner when he shall be found. I am a stranger. He does not know me. I am merely passing through the town tonight to discharge a matter which has been long in my mind. My errand is now completed, and I go pleased and a little proud, and you will never see me again. There is a paper attached to the sack which will explain everything. Good night, madam." The old lady was afraid of the mysterious big stranger, and was glad to see him go. But her curiosity was roused, and she went straight to the sack and brought away the paper. It began as follows: "To be published, or the right man sought out by private inquiry, either will answer. This sack contains gold coin weighing 160 pounds 4 ounces, mercy on us, and the door not locked." Mrs. Richards flew to it all in a tremble and locked it, then pulled down the window shades and stood frightened, worried, and wondering if there was anything else she could do toward making herself and the money more safe. She listened a while for burglars, then surrendered to curiosity, and went back to the lamp and finished reading the paper. "I am a foreigner, and am presently going back to my own country, to remain there permanently. I am grateful to America for what I have received at her hands during my long stay under her flag. And to one of her citizens, a citizen of Adleyburg, I am especially grateful for a great kindness done me a year or two ago. Two great kindnesses, in fact. I will explain. I was a gambler. I say I was. I was a ruined gambler. I arrived in this village at night, hungry and without a penny. I asked for help in the dark. I was ashamed to beg in the light. I begged of the right man. He gave me $20, that is to say, he gave me life, as I considered it. He also gave me fortune, for out of that money I have made myself rich at the gaming table. And finally, a remark which he made to me has remained with me to this day, and has at last conquered me, and in conquering has saved the remnant of my morals. I shall gamble no more. Now I have no idea who that man was, but I want him found, and I want him to have this money, to give away, throw away, or keep, as he pleases. It is merely my way of testifying my gratitude to him. If I could stay, I would find him myself, but no matter, he will be found. This is an honest town, an incorruptible town, and I know I can trust it without fear. This man can be identified by the remark which he made to me. I feel persuaded that he will remember it. And now my plan is this. If you prefer to conduct the inquiry privately, do so. Tell the contents of this present writing to anyone who is likely to be the right man. If he shall answer, I am the man, the remark I made was so and so, apostrophe apply the test to wit. Open the sack, and in it, you will find a sealed envelope containing that remark. If the remark mentioned by the candidate tallies with it, give him the money, and ask no further questions, for he is certainly the right man. But if you shall prefer a public inquiry, then publish this present writing in the local paper with these instructions added, to wit. 30 days from now, let the candidate appear at the town hall at 8, in the evening, Friday, and hand his remark, in a sealed envelope, to the Rev. Mr. Burgess, if he will be kind enough to act, and let Mr. Burgess there, and then destroy the seals of the sack, open it, and see if the remark is correct. If correct, let the money be delivered, with my sincere gratitude, to my benefactor thus identified. Mrs. Richards sat down, gently quivering with excitement, and was soon lost in thinkings after this pattern. Had a strange thing it is. ... And what a fortune for that kind man who set his bread afloat upon the waters. ... If it had only been my husband that did it. For we are so poor, so old and poor. ... Then, with a sigh, it was not my Edward. No, it was not he that gave a stranger $20. It is a pity too. I see it now. Then, with a shudder, it is gambler's money, the wages of sin. We couldn't take it. We couldn't touch it. I don't like to be near it. It seems a defilement. She moved to a farther chair. I wish Edward would come and take it to the bank. A burglar might come at any moment. It is dreadful to be here all alone with it. At 11 Mr. Richards arrived, and while his wife was saying, I'm so glad you've come, he was saying, I am so tired, clear out. It is dreadful to be poor, and have to make these dismal journeys at my time of life. Always at the grind, on the salary another man's slave, and he sitting at home in his slippers, rich and comfortable. I am so sorry for you, Edward, you know that, but be comforted. We have our livelihood. We have our good name, yes, Mary, and that is everything. Don't mind my talk, it's just a moment's irritation, and doesn't mean anything. Kiss me there, it's all gone now, and I am not complaining anymore. What have you been getting? What's in the sack? Then his wife told him the great secret. It dazed him for a moment, then he said, it weighs 160 pounds? Why, Mary, it's 4 thou-dash-sand dollars, think of it, a whole fortune. Not 10 men in this village are worth that much. Give me the paper. He skimmed through it and said, isn't it an adventure? Why, it's a romance. It's like the impossible things one reads about in books, and never sees in life. He was well stirred up now, cheerful, even gleeful. He tapped his old wife on the cheek and said humorously, "Why, we're rich, very rich. All we've got to do is to bury the money and burn the papers. If the gambler ever comes to inquire, we'll merely look coldly upon him and say, 'What is this nonsense you are talking? We have never heard of you and your sack of gold before.'" And then he would look foolish, and in the meantime, while you are running on with your jokes, the money is still here, and it is fast getting along toward burglar-time.
True.
Very well, what shall we do? Make the inquiry private.
No, not that. It would spoil the romance. The public method is better. Think what a noise it will make.
And it will make all the other towns jealous, for no stranger would trust such a thing to any town but Hadleyburg, and they know it. It's a great cart for us. I must get to the printing office now, or I shall be too late. But stop, stop, don't leave me here alone with it, Edward. But he was gone. For only a little while, however. Not far from his own house he met the editor, proprietor of the paper, and gave him the document, and said, "Here's a good thing for you, Cox, put it in. It may be too late, Mr. Richards, but I'll see." At home again, he and his wife sat down to talk the charming mystery over. They were in no condition for sleep. The first question was, who could the citizen have been who gave the stranger the $20? It seemed a simple one. Both answered it in the same breath, Barclay Goodson.
"Yes," said Richards, "he could have done it, and it would have been like him, but there's not another in the town.
Everybody will grant that, Edward, grant it privately, anyway. For 6 months now, the village has been its own proper self once more honest, narrow, self-righteous, and stingy. It is what he always called it, to the day of his death said it right out publicly too.
Yes, and he was hated for it.
Oh, of course, but he didn't care. I reckon he was the best hated man among us, except the Reverend Burgess.
Well, Burgess deserves it. He will never get another congregation here. Mean as the town is, it knows how to estimate him.
Edward, doesn't it seem odd that the stranger should appoint Burgess to deliver the money?
Well, yes, it does.
That is, why, so much that is, eh? Would you select him?
Mary, maybe the stranger knows him better than this village does.
Much that would help Burgess. The husband seemed perplexed for an answer. The wife kept a steady eye upon him, and waited. Finally Richard said, with the hesitancy of one who is making a statement which is likely to encounter doubt, "Mary, Burgess is not a bad man." His wife was certainly surprised.
"Nonsense," she exclaimed.
"He is not a bad man. I know. The whole of his unpopularity had its foundation in that one thing, the thing that made so much noise. That one thing, apostrophe indeed. As if that one thing wasn't enough, all by itself.
Plenty. Plenty. Only he wasn't guilty of it."
"How you talk. Not guilty of it. Everybody knows he was guilty.
Mary, I give you my word, he was innocent.
I can't believe it and I don't.
How do you know?
It is a confession. I am ashamed, but I will make it. I was the only man who knew he was innocent. I could have saved him, and, well, you know how the town was wrought up. I hadn't the pluck to do it. It would have turned everybody against me. I felt mean, ever so mean, but I didn't dare. I hadn't the manliness to face that."
Mary looked troubled, and for a while was silent. Then she said stammeringly,
I don't think it would have done for you to, one, mustn't hurt public opinion, one has to be so careful. So it was a difficult road, and she got mired. But after a little she got started again.
Tea was a great pity, but why, we couldn't afford it, Edward, we couldn't indeed.
Oh, I wouldn't have had you do it for anything.
It would have lost us the goodwill of so many people, Mary.
And then, what troubles me now is, what he thinks of us, Edward.
He doesn't suspect that I could have saved him.
Oh, exclaimed the wife, in a tone of relief, I am glad of that.
As long as he doesn't know that you could have saved him, well, that makes it a great deal better. Why, I might have known he didn't know, because he is always trying to be friendly with us, as little encouragement as we give him. More than once people have twitted me with it. There's the Wilsons, and the Wilcoxes, and the Harknesses. They take a mean pleasure in saying your friend Burgess, apostrophe, because they know it pesters me. I wish he wouldn't persist in liking us so. I can't think why he keeps it up. I can explain it. It's another confession. When the thing was new and hot, and the town made a plan to ride him on a rail, my conscience hurt me so that I couldn't stand it, and I went privately and gave him notice, and he got out of the town and stayed out till it was safe to come back. Edward. If the town had found it out. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.